Hi, this is Mark Atkinson, and you're listening to the Cherry Jam podcast.
Hello, and welcome to episode 31, series 4 of Cherry Jam, officially the second best rugby union podcast in the world. Third, if you include rugby league podcasts. Thank you very much, first of all, for everyone who voted for us in the Sports Podcast Awards. It's fucking funny that we came second, third, however you want to put it down, but unbelievable. We beat the official England rugby podcast. That alone is hysterical. And so thank you very much again. It really, really means a huge amount to us, you know, as we all kind of started this as a bit of a laugh, thought, you know, it'd be nice if a few people listened to us, and to even get that many people voting for us and recognising us is really much appreciated. And yeah, thanks again. Unfortunately, though, we have to talk about other things other than just how amazingly silly it is that we're being voted into those positions. And that includes Gloucester Bath, which we will cover shortly. We're also going to be covering a few other bits and pieces this week. An interesting decision at the Leicester Exeter game, and whether referees are finding interesting and new ways to keep to send players off, I think was the thing that Baxter used. We're also going to be talking about the Jim and I, I'm sure we can have five minutes on the England women again. Excellent performance against a Wales side, even though down there 13 men. Wasps and their apparent resurrection, and more generally about red cards, head contact, and again going back to Rob Baxter's comments around players being sent off, etc. And anything else we want to talk about. Right. Obviously myself, Ed Price. Russ Brooks joins me this week. Jim Harley and Loz Landry. Thanks a lot, Loz. Nice to see you again. Snowy's in the air somewhere. I don't know where.
In the air tonight.
He's in the air tonight. I'm assuming playing the drums with a gorilla. I don't know. Anyway. Right. We'll start off because we have to. Oh, God. Gloucester Bath.
This is going to be a short section to the pod, yeah?
I think it might be because it was pretty awful. Russ, you were the only one. I don't think you weren't able to make it on Friday. I'll let you have your 2 pence on the basis of you watching it via the PRCV feed. Go ahead.
I can't remember it because I started out. I'm just going to sum it up, given you did it the other week with a Blackadder quote. It started badly, tailed off a little in the middle, and the less said about the end, the better. But apart from that, it was excellent, wasn't it? I mean,
well, the first 30 minutes were good.
Yeah. Well,
maybe I think we can all assume.
I mean, like,
minutes,
so
we were great until they scored.
All joking aside, I felt reasonably positive when the first two tries were well worked. They were nice. I kind of thought, well, you know, yeah, we're not attacking as madly as we were against La Rochelle. It clearly wasn't the same kind of style, but we all said you can't do that. The intensity was lacking. There were errors on both sides. That was two not very good sides playing a game of rugby, I would say. There were a lot of errors. Mm-hmm. But we took our chances well. And then, I mean, from the moment Ludlow got his yellow card, I started getting nervous. From the moment they got ahead, I just knew what was coming. I just didn't have any faith in us getting back into the game. You made the point you can't criticise the game plan this week, and it wasn't the game plan that lost it, because I don't know, we just didn't, nothing came off. But my God, I don't think I've watched a game with so many brain dead decisions. And I'm sure we'll talk about the last few minutes in particular. Only Gloucester could go for two losing bonus points, decide to go for one losing bonus point and come away with nothing. It felt like an episode of Bullseye where we got what we deserved, not even our bus fare home.
Let's have a look at what you could have won.
Yeah, honestly, I know we can't fault the game plan, but there is, you know, I'm aware this has been quite a shit week for me in a lot of ways. So I'm trying to measure and like not overreact. Like you said, Ed, don't tweet when angry. I'm trying not to pod when angry, but something is just not right somewhere. I mean, you put the stat, I don't know how many on the bounce we've lost now, but this feels as low a time for me as a Gloucester fan as I can remember. And it's just not a lot good coming. And I just feel really, it's just not a nice place to be at the moment, is it?
It's quite deflating, I think.
I'm so bored of people saying, but the injuries, you know, we are very low in the league, but there are so many teams with the injuries with just key players. That side we had out last night, Friday, was pretty much the same side that played La Rochelle and nearly lost. So let's not just kid ourselves. This is down to injuries. There's a lot to unpick with this Gloucester side, I think.
Yeah. Loz, I think it was, you were down just to the right of me, in front of me on Friday night. Your views, you can go for positives. If you want to say some, there were some positives. I thought there were some good performances in the first 30 minutes were excellent, but up to you.
I think you're saying you couldn't really criticise the game plan. I think the game plan still wasn't great. There was still we overkicked the ball as per normal. But then there is the argument that the weather conditions probably led to that. But I still felt as though there was a move away from I couldn't see why we had to move away from how we played against La Rochelle when it worked so well. Mm-hmm. We were playing a lesser team in Bath, because regardless of whether they beat us or not, still a lesser team than La Rochelle are. And I think if we played like that, it showed that it actually suited our team by how well it worked. Yeah, the defense, what was disappointing is hearing players say about you don't have to get up anything to get us up for the match, and then that defensive intensity not being there and the physicality not being there, because we got bullied a bit up front. That was a little bit disappointing. But what was more concerning is it doesn't matter what game plan you have. If you're going to give away that many penalties as soon as you come under pressure, you're going to lose matches. And it just was so incredibly frustrating at how dull some of the penalties are as well. So it's what makes it all the more avoidable. You know, someone like Skivington must be thinking, what the hell have I got to do? Because he comes up with a game plan. Whether we like it or not, it's a game plan that he's been coaching them. So in theory, they should be able to execute it. Mm-hmm. And then you have those sorts of errors. And, you know, you can't... it would have been almost flattering if we got those bonus points, I think, because we didn't deserve them. We just, with the amount of penalties we gave away, we didn't deserve anything from that game. And that's what we got, I'm afraid. Positives, the start, the way we played, when we played rugby, we looked a decent side. And there is that positive hope. Well, as Russell says, it's a hope that kills you. But you can, if you can piece together the moments where we've been really good this season, there is hope there. But the trouble is, there's been far too many when we're not. And Snowy would be, if he was here now, he'd be turning around and he'd be saying, one win or one performance against La Rochelle doesn't make us a good side, just like one defeat against Bath makes us a bad side. The trouble is it's not just a defeat against Bath at the moment. It's a defeat against Newcastle. It's a defeat against Leicester. And it's the manner in which we're having these defeats. It's almost as though the players were really up for La Rochelle, but haven't been since. And I can't understand how a professional team can be like that. I can understand it if it was likes of us and we got a rugby match and we're not up for it. Usually because we've been on the piss the night before, but the players wouldn't have been in that position. Well, you'd hope they weren't in that position. And it is a little bit frustrating because I don't see how it's going to get better. And I know I've put some of the comments because Russ put this clip up about a new backs coach coming in. And I made a few curt comments about we don't need a backs coach because we kick the ball away all the time. But I think when we play, do we really need a new backs coach, going off on a tangent? Because when we've played rugby, we've looked a half decent side.
So I think my problem is, like you said, Loz, Skivington doesn't cause the players to make the errors on the pitch. But he sets the week. The coaching staff set the week. They get the players in the mindset. If the players aren't ready, the management should be getting them ready. these errors are happening week in week. They've been happening a lot. They happened early in the season, and we all said, oh, we're not too worried now if these, as the season goes on. We're still talking about silly errors, drop balls. I mean, the one Bath try, yeah, it was a bad bounce, but it was laughable, wasn't it? And these things still happen. And it's like someone, some coach has to take that out of the game. And I do think we have some good players in that side. What I think we lack is some rugby intelligence at times.
I know what you mean there, Russ. I'm going to come to Jim quickly, and then we'll come back about talk about rugby intelligence and leadership, because there's a separate bit I want to go into, and I know you have comments on that. So, Jim, your views, please.
I think I'm just really perversely pleased that the season was already done and dusted.
Yeah.
Because if it wasn't, I would have been so much more angry. So much more angry. I kind of, a bit like you said, Russ, it was kind of when things started going the wrong way, you thought, here we go. That's it. Game over. First 20 minutes, you know, like we played good rugby. You know, we scored a couple of good tries. And I think what's happened, and I know we were going to talk about the game management, but it was just that we just compounded. One error was compounded by making that error worse by giving the ball back, giving huge amounts of territory. And rather than just, whoa, hold your horses, let's batten down the hatches, weather this storm. We've just conceded a try. We might concede another 3 or 7, but we're going to stem the flow. We're going to go back to basics a little bit, maybe even go back to the box kicking. You say that we kicked it too much. I'm not sure that we did actually on Friday, Lars. I thought that when we did kick, the kicks weren't that bad. They were when we should have been. Maybe a couple of times we were still going with a box kick when we were around about the halfway line. And you think, well, hang on, maybe we should be pushing on. But then saying that, the Exeter game today, I mean, they were trying to play rugby on their 5-metre line, and look how that turned out for them. So I think maybe we just need to be a little bit more sensible when it's time to play rugby, when it's not time to play rugby, and just, yeah, when you have a stupid knock on and you try and catch the ball when you don't need to catch the ball and end up giving them the line out rather than it being our line out. Don't double down on it by giving a penalty away at said line out.
Yeah. So I think that is a good summary. I'm going to come on to the, I think there's some really key points. Russ, you've raised it already. Jim, you've highlighted it. Lars, you've mentioned it as well. And we've been saying it for weeks about leadership and game management and things like that, which we will come on to in a second. Just a couple of my thoughts just briefly. As I said, I think, first 25, 30 minutes, I thought we played some really good rugby. I thought our intensity in defence was very good at that point. And the yellow card for Ludlow, I felt it was a bit harsh, but I understand why they gave it. It's you know, he went in two upright, player was dropping. Yeah, he did stop the try getting scored. If that had happened the other way around, we'd be very annoyed and we'd be calling for a penalty try as well. But what I thought was really poor from that point on, again, was the fact that we compounded errors on errors on errors. And I think the last 20 minutes... I mean, the daft thing was, even though you're quite right, Russ, Jim, Loz, as soon as they went in front, I didn't feel we were going to win. And I just didn't think we were going to win. But we still had 3 or 4 really good opportunities to score tries and opportunities to cut the deficit, etc. So that's the kind of thing. And that's where I do feel a little bit sorry for Skivs, because it's not his fault per se. In that regard, you know,
it's not his fault that a player knocks on.
No,
it's not his fault that a player puts in a forward pass or you know, drops the ball in contact. These are skills that they train during the week on and should be better at.
Yes, agreed.
You know, we all yeah. know that you make errors.
Yeah, errors happen, don't they? But yeah.
And unfortunately, it does seem to be kind of a confidence thing. And, you know, when things are going well, things go really well. And when things are going bad, they get worse.
Yeah, we're a very streaky side. I mean, just to give you a bit of context for us, we've had 5 defeats in a row now. We've only won 2 games this calendar year, which is against Bordeaux away and Quinns at home. And since December, we've only won 2 league games.
I mean,
We won 4 of our first 5. And then we've only won 7 games all season.
I mean, yeah, it's not great, is it? And I do take, you know, the coaches aren't the people out there making players make the errors. But equally, you can work on it. And I think, I'm just trying to articulate this in the right way. I don't want
there
this
is an
all.
Element of rage, I know.
Yeah, it's not trying to blame. This isn't just all at Skips. This is down to a mindset and a collective mentality of, you know, we were a side as a team that were fucking dreadful. You know, we're talking low level and you would make errors, but you dig in and you have to be composed and think it through. It just sometimes feels like there's an element of forcing it. And that's something that the game plan, the game management needs to be about. And we talked about players, this is where that leadership issue and what worries me comes in. Absolutely, it's really difficult to change the game plan on the fly. We've talked about that. You know, your players aren't what you want is that someone, and at the end, it had to be someone like Billy 12 Trees, Ben Morgan, some of your senior players, or it could even be, it doesn't matter who, to get them together and go, lads, this is too many errors, let's just slow it down, let's make it simple, whatever. I actually agree with Jim. The box kick was getting a good bit of change because on the one ring, Louis Rees-Sammet was chasing really well and getting the knock back. He was knocking it back our direction. So we were actually getting something out of it. And again,
fair, Christoph was pinging him for all the stuff we moan about, like the blockers and stuff.
Yeah.
We were getting quite a few penalties in that first 20 minutes.
I mean, the one block, just an aside that was funny, and I thought he played well, was Ollie Fawley, was when de Glanville tried to get in the way of Ollie Fawley, who knocked him over like a bowling ball. That's quite an effective way to make it clear someone's in your fucking way. But that's sometimes what I feel we lack, is those people who are just a bit streetwise or can do something.
What we lack is someone that would grab the game by the scruff.
Exactly, Lars.
Lawrence Dellaglio used to do in the olden days. You know, we just don't have that sort of player. And quite a few teams seem to have that. You know, you only have to look at Leicester. They got that Visa who plays number 8. Now, I'm not saying we should go out and get Visa to play for our team or anything like that, but I'm just saying we don't seem to have anyone who just can, when it's not quite going to plan, not necessarily change the game plan, as you say, but just take the game by the scruff and lead the team.
And that's, just to bring it back to the coaching staff, that's where my frustration is that these problems have been at Gloucester for years and years and years, and it just doesn't seem like it needs changing. There's a cultural shift of something that we just seem to lack that edge. Like, you know, there are certain teams, if they go behind, if Leicester went behind against in a game like that, like they behind in Northampton, I'm not sure any of their fans would go, oh, well, that's the game gone then. Or like a Saracens, there are certain teams that you just know will find a way. We are not one of those sides, and something has got to change, you know.
I agree entirely. And we've kind of mentioned the coaches a bit, Russ, and I think that we're very, very keen not to highlight individual players.
Yeah.
In a negative way, we're very keen to promote them in a positive way. I do think there's been a recurring theme over some of the last couple of weeks in relation to the leadership. I think we've highlighted it before. We really love Lewis Ludlow's passion and his intensity and drive when he's on the field. But I think there are questions, and it's not just us saying this, there are questions within the fan base. I've seen it on Twitter and social media, on Shedweb and other places, whether he's at that point now as captain, whether I think it probably is the end of his captaincy.
Because see, I'm not questioning him as a captain. What I'm saying by leadership is this, you don't have to be a captain to be a leader.
No, and this is not. This is what I'm coming on to, Loz. There are several ways of being a leader. One, captaincy, yes, that might involve being a bit niggly in the ref's ear and making sure he understands what's going on. For example, the scrum. The first couple of scrums, I don't think really Christoph Ridley kind of knew what was going on. He was evening it up either way. Second half, we got absolutely mullered. Now, I did notice that both Vivas and Jamal were complaining that something was going on in the scrum. Now, whether that's true, whether it's genuine, or they're just having a moan because they're getting their head stuck through their arse, I don't know. But the fact that you want your captain at that point maybe to relay an issue to Christoph Ridley, maybe say something, this is something that's going on, can you keep an eye on it? It's only a small thing, but that type of thing. But certainly, from a leadership point of view, Jim's highlighted it already. We've unfortunately given a line out away when we didn't need to. So what you don't want to do at that point is compound it by giving a daft penalty away. And unfortunately, and then it was Lewis Ladd who gave the penalty away. Going up and trying to compete in that manner, is there much point? Is there really much point when you can, the chances of you winning the ball are going to be slim anyway. You're going to get crap ball if you do win it. And you're more than likely, with the way that Bath are going to be, they're going to be looking for an arm on them on the basis they got done in the first half.
They didn't have to look for it. I mean, no, it was
bloody
right
obvious, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was, that's the thing.
And he interlocked his arm with, and it's not just a case of the contact in the air. He brought his arm down, bringing the opposition arm with him and kind of held it in and tilted him. And you just think, oh, if he'd have fallen badly, that could have
been a really bad injury. Yeah, yeah. Sorry, Jim, go on.
No, I just think, and I think Ludlow's definitely one of those players that really does play with his heart on his sleeve. And, he's probably giving it, bigging it up big time because... it's the Bath, it's the derby. This one matters more than anything. And I think sometimes he just tries too hard. Like, he's trying to make more...
Yeah, against La Rochelle as well, he became a penalty machine, walking penalty. I'm not having a go at him by saying that, but when the pressure comes on sometimes, he is so passionate, so determined to leave. And I like him as a captain because the players want to play for him, and don't underestimate how important that is as a captain to having the team. Those players follow him, and he leads by example. But... unfortunately, we also need someone who's, as I said, grabbing the game by the scruff of the neck doesn't just mean you pick the ball up and carry it over the game line and beat a few players. It also means you turn around and you say, look, guys, as you guys have just said, let's slow it down a little bit. Let's stop giving away the penalties. Let's regroup and go again rather than... Go on.
I was just saying, and I agree with all of that, Loz. And someone like Martin Johnson became a better captain when he took a little bit of his edge off, didn't he? He toned it down. And I think Ludlow can rein it in. He has in the past. He's had spells where he can control it. And I think I agree with Jim. I think he just was a little bit too far on that. This is the game that matters the most. The other issue is, like Ed said, it's not just about your captain. Now, Ludlow was not on the pitch when all those decisions were made at the end of the game. And there are players who are senior enough.
He was, actually.
He'd gone off by then, hadn't he?
He'd gone back on.
But there were times anyway. Thanks, Ed. Get my chain of thought back. There were points in that game, and that's part of it, where he wasn't the sole decision maker, or to make decisions. And you need a good senior group there. And there were players on that pitch who should know better as well. And
let's not criticise the players too much on that last decision.
Whoever
the bell end said to run the fucking kicking tee on is the one who needs to be shot.
And that's what I...
That's what stopped us from going for the corner. They might have been looking at going for it, but once that kicking tee comes on the pitch, we don't have a choice now. We have to go for the goal.
I agree, Loz. And that all...
Santi was trying to make the kick in like 18 seconds. And it was only when the clock was dead and he was still trying to do it quick.
Yeah, 12-3 stopped him.
What you want to do...
Grabbed him and went, whoa, 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 whoa. There's no point now. Just make good the kick.
What you really want to do is put pressure on a kicker who shanked his last one as well. You know, just make it a little bit harder for him is definitely the way to go. But you're right, Loz, and that's my other problem is the leadership on the pitch goes so far, but whoever made that decision to bring the kicking tee on needs to have a good look at themselves. I don't know if that's Skivs. I don't know if it's a backs coach, whoever made that call. But the leadership everywhere, there's something amiss there. And it's, I don't know, it's just it just feels very wrong to me. You should not be at the end of a game going, well, fuck it, let's just get a point and get out of here.
Playing devil's advocate, Russ. I'm going to play devil's advocate. And at the time, I thought it was the right decision. And I still do, to be honest. The game, we couldn't win the game. Our pack was getting absolutely smashed to smithereens.
Our
lineout
wasn't great.
Our lineout had gone to pot. Our lineout had gone to pot. And actually, if you look at where the penalty was given and where it was on the pitch, you'd expect Santi or any other kicker really to be nailing that. The fact he shanked it, I know he shanked the previous one, but I understand exactly where people are coming from about going for the try.
That's,
I think probably
that was a 95% success kick.
Kick, yeah.
And any, ever team, that is, like I said, it's the most Gloucester thing. And that goes back, you know, I'm so tired of that joke of it being a Gloucester thing. Our mentality is, you know, I just think teams must know how fragile we are. And you only have to look at games like Saracens away, where we blew the lead. There's so many. I almost struggle to remember. There's so many games where you would think we've got this home and dry and we keep blowing them. And at some point, there's got to be some accountability for that. Something somewhere. And I genuinely don't know where the problem starts and where it ends. But you cannot just rely on Ludlow. Behind Ludlow, Chris Harris, behind those two, I'm struggling to think of who would be a potential good captain. And the problem with Harris, really? The problem with Harris is he's not going to be there every week anyway.
Well, you know? I take your point. And I think sort of finishing off the review of the Bath game, what was interesting to me was coming out of the stadium, and I was slightly surprised by this, actually. I think if we hadn't had the performance against La Rochelle, I do wonder what the reaction would have been like. I think the game against La Rochelle has given Givington and the coaching staff and the players just a little bit more leeway in that they've given them a little bit more positivity and sort of the fact that we've got all these injuries and things like that. So there's, because I came out of that ground and it was disappointment. It wasn't anger. I think if we'd had a shock, if we got thumped by La Rochelle.
Yeah, I think it was more of a case of we saw it coming and everyone was more of the opinion of, oh, for Christ's sake, than anything else. It's the La Rochelle was a bit of a freak result. It doesn't buy anyone anything time-wise for me. I'm not suggesting what I am suggesting is we keep the coaching staff.
I agree.
We've always moaned. We've sat here and said it's as Gloucester as you can be to change a head coach every 2 to 3 years because that's what we've done. He's been in there, 2-3 years now?
Yeah.
He needs to stay. We need to give him a chance, and especially with no relegation. The frustrating thing is this time last season, I can remember Austin Healey turning around and saying on the rugby programmes, the coverage that they were doing of a match, that Gloucester were a top four side, and it's just a shame that you know it's not quite gone their way as to why we weren't in the top four. You can't see anyone turning around and saying anything of that sort of thing about us now.
No.
And we're in danger of missing out of Champions Cup qualifications.
It's only because you look at the last few fixtures of the season, and we've got Sale at home and Bristol away. Remarkably, we can still get in the Champions Cup. I still can't quite understand this because basically, Exeter, Bristol, Gloucester are all about as bad as each other, and there is still a chance, amazingly, for us to get into the Champions Cup.
Bristol, well, I think we're probably there.
If we beat Sale, Yeah, well, if we won both games, yes, we would do. But on the basis we've only won two games this calendar year,
we're well, not saying both games. I'm saying beat Bristol. And it puts
yeah, sorry, you're right.
I get Bristol are one of our rivals for that said position. That's what I'm trying to say.
Bristol feels a more realistically winnable game.
So interestingly, Bristol's next game is against Exeter. So one of those teams is going to knock each other out, is going to knock themselves out. We've got Sale and then Bristol. So yeah, we'll see. I mean, I find it remarkable we're even still with a shout getting Champions Cup.
Yeah, and I think that
was because it's down to eighth, isn't it?
I mean, yeah. It is. Yeah. Let's be honest.
And normally it's six, maybe seven.
And I think let's be honest. Snow has made this point a number of times. It's not a good league. That like you know a lot. You know the reason it's close is because there's not a lot of strong teams. And I just want to go back because I know I've probably been the most negative. I agree with Loz. Now is not the time to get rid of the coaching staff. And we've got to be honest. No, there's no tie. You can't bring someone in now and expect huge changes next season. All the signings are pretty much done and dusted. Yeah. The squad is not changing massively, is it? So it's George's squad. You've got to stick with it. This time come Christmas or whatever, and we're having a similar con. He's got no hiding place when those players are back from injury. And I think like Loz said, and we had this conversation not on air, Ed, he's got to be an absolute idiot if he does not recognise the game plan needs tweaking. So something's got to give somewhere. And like I get Loz's point about not bringing in an attacking coach if you just kick it away, but I get what you're saying. And the one thing I do take from that Bath game is that we did try, when we tried in those first few minutes to play, there were some very good attacks that created.
Anytime we play with pace and intensity, we look a fantastic side. As we slow it down, going with the ball, as soon as we slow it down and attack and go down to that kicking game, we do look a fairly average side.
The mentality worries me more than anything. That was my final
One of the guys that are standing here, actually, he was calling 3 points, 3 points when we had that 5 metre penalty, like underneath the posts, 5 metres or 8 metres out, whatever it was. And I was like, no, we need to put the pressure on here. But he was absolutely right. Because obviously, if we'd have got those three, which would have been an absolute sitter, would have really changed the complexity of the final few minutes. But I think we are not a side that does particularly well with the tap and go.
I think we scored one try from a tap and go this season.
Yeah, and the tap and go.
It's be better off taking the scrum.
One of those, like, let's tap it and let's pass it back. You know, it's just we tried to be too clever and we coughed the ball up straight away. So I don't know whether they, you know, they're no Exeter when it comes to that play anyway.
We'd be better off taking the scrum and the number eight then going on the run off the back of the scrum if you're going to do that. The point I wanted to make is what worries me, because Russ said our recruitment's pretty much complete. I think he's right on that. It probably is. But what worries me is next season, we don't know how, because of the way our club works, we don't know how serious an injury it is to Fraser Balmain. And going in with just Kirill and Jamal Ford Robinson on the tight end side, one specialist and one who can do both sides. There's a big concern for me, because we're one injury away from being right at the edge of, you know, an error, because Fraser Balmain's probably not going to be available until after the World Cup. He might be available before, and we don't know. But will he come back as the same player? Because whenever someone has a serious injury, we never know. And what worries me is we could do, well, whilst these are good players, what we've got, I'd love us to have a world-class tight end in there.
To be honest, I'd take Will Stewart, because he absolutely destroyed us at times Friday in the loose. I mean, he was devastating in the scrum. He's good. But that's probably, you know, he'd be someone like that.
There were rumours.
He was heavily rumoured to be coming, wasn't he?
Yeah, there were rumours. Just a quick note, actually, on injuries before we do finally finish on this side of the pod. If people weren't aware, Hastings and McGuigan were both part of the wider squad, were part of the warm-up on Friday night. I believe Fraser was in and about the stadium and walking around and having chats with people. And I think the rumour was that he feels that he's going to be back he probably will be back for the start of the Premiership based on the delay in the Premiership because of the World Cup. That's the important thing to remember.
So Mark Atkinson on comms and they're probably the media team are probably going to give him a proper kick in for this. As you said, that he said, I'm going to be in a lot of trouble with the physios for this, but McGuigan and Hastings are available for next week.
Yes,
I mean, they do seem to be a bit more relaxed.
He's not going to get in trouble for saying that when they're training.
When they're on the bloody pitch warming up.
No, I know. That was, but what I mean is, it was tongue in cheek. It does feel like they're getting a bit more relaxed with the injuries.
I believe the issue came from players didn't feel comfortable being said, oh, they're 2 weeks away, 3 weeks away. And then when they don't get there because there might be something that goes wrong in their rehab, there's a lot of pressure and there's questions asked. So I do understand that. I think actually the way the club have gone recently in terms of when there is a long-term injury, they do announce it and say, you know, unfortunately, so-and-so is out for the rest of the season, blah, blah, blah. Now, the one advantage we've got, as I should say, is that we don't have to rush Val back now, because there was a potential that we might have to try and rush him back. He felt he was comfortable and he would be back before the end of the season. Obviously, having McGuigan back, great. Cicino and Singleton, probably, again, back end of the year, we'd imagine. Hastings is returning soon. Fraser, I think, yeah, from what I believe and what somebody said, that he should be back before the beginning of the next season. Mark Atkinson himself, probably, again, is going to be next year, realistically, based on that type of injury and the type of player he is. Now, Russ, on your point about time for coaches and stuff, the advantage that George Skivington has, probably for him this season, or sorry, next season, is because of the late start, because of the World Cup, he's going to probably have nearly everybody available to him when we start that tournament, start the league, barring any injuries that happen in the World Cup. So fingers crossed that the likes of Santi Alamano, Reece Sammet and Mercer, because be honest, Mercer probably will be going to the World Cup, are all come out through unscathed. They're all not knackered and we can crack on and away we go. Right, we're going to pause, come back, and we're going to talk about... an interesting decision made in the Leicester-Exeter game, following on from that head contact and red cards, and then finishing off with the thing about Wasps. Oh, and by the way, again, and really randomly being the third best rugby podcast in the world.
Hi, this is Chris Harris, and you're listening to the Cherry Jam podcast.
Right, we're going to talk about a decision that was made between the Leicester and Exeter game today. Our mate Carl. oh, Jesus. Right, okay. So, if it happens,
can't wait
seen
to it, so we can talk about it.
Yeah, you never know. It might happen, won't it, Jim? Anyway, if you haven't seen it, in the process of attempting to score a try for Leicester, Chris Ashton is tackled into touch. The first tackle, I can't remember who actually, I think it was Hogg, wasn't it? Hogg made the original tackle.
Yeah.
And was dragging him towards touch. And then Ollie Woodburn comes in to support. And the law, and it's entirely right, this is the daft thing. So what Carl Dixon said is entirely correct within the parameters of the laws of rugby. Because the player's on the floor and had been tackled, Woodburn can't then dive in and assist the tackle. For those who are saying, well, what does that mean about Ashton? Well, Ashton actually was being carried by momentum. So he wasn't moving at all and he's allowed to place the ball. So what do we reckon? Do we reckon it was absolutely fine? No problems at all, Carl Dixon? Or do we think there was a bit of lack of empathy in the game and actually he got it wrong?
That is absolutely where the referee needs to go. What you did was illegal because technically the laws are this and you have stopped a try being scored because of those actions. So I'm going to give a penalty try and I am not going to give a yellow card because I think that's too harsh a punishment for the situation.
Well, certainly when the yellow card results in a red card.
Yeah, and to be fair, I think probably even if it didn't, I would suggest that actually a yellow card in that specific situation probably doesn't warrant a yellow card, because like the Exeter captain was saying, well, what else is he supposed to do? He sits and says, well, he's got to leave him. I was like, as a rugby player in defence, you don't just go, oh, I better just leave you sliding towards the line.
Well, Dixon, you know
that it was both women's games. It was the Saracens-Gloucester game at King's Home. Penalty try, no yellow card given. And again, at the weekend in the England-Wales game, penalty try, no yellow card given.
Yeah, because so I'm sure...
these things can happen. And it definitely happens when they don't know who it was.
There was an argument on the comms for the Gloucester game where they said they had to yellow card Ludlow because it was a penalty try. So again, this is the biggest problem, isn't it? It's like you said, Ed, by the letter of the law, Carl had to make the decision Carl made. But they never apply it consistently, do they? Because
no, that's
in our game. Yeah. In our game, they're saying yeah, penalty try yellow, and then Jim's just given a load of examples where that wasn't the case. And for me, the biggest difficulty in all of this is I see all that logic and I understand it, but it's just fucking funny that it happened to Exeter after Baxter's comments in the week.
Well, yes, it's I'm going to come on.
I mean, oh, yeah, there's some beautiful, beautiful irony in the universe, and I just love stuff like that. And also, watching half the Exeter players throw their toys out the pram on Twitter, I mean, if people in rugby like to get holier than thou. If they saw footballers doing that, they would go mad. But seeing Slade and Cowan Dickey saying, oh, that's an atrocious decision, the game's gone wrong, it's... No, guys, shut your fucking mouths. You're active sportsmen for your club. That just should not be on. You know, I have a bigger problem with. Yeah, exactly. I have a bigger problem with that than I do that decision, because... how many times are you on the wrong end of a decision and you used to just have to suck it up and take it? And so there's that. Yeah.
And I tell you, sorry, Russ, I think as well, it's been talked about a little bit that we were watching on TV. What if you were in the ground? You're not getting any of that information from the officials. I mean, that's bad. And it's been talked about. They're trying to get those comms over Tannoy's, but my God, I mean, if you were an Exeter supporter in that crowd, you'd be like, what the fuck's just gone on and happened?
Yeah, we've made that point before, haven't we, so many times. I mean, it does feel like it is now getting to the point that if someone is in the act of scoring, your tackle has got to be spot on. It's got to be absolutely perfect, otherwise you're in serious trouble. Now,
and you can argue... As the runner... you can dive, you can slide, you can do all sorts.
Jump.
But, you know, and especially when we had weather like we did on Friday night, you think, well, you can slide in from the 22. So, you know, if you've got as much baby oil and Vaseline on as Reece Samet had on his legs, then I reckon he could have probably slid in from halfway. So
slightly worried that you were focusing that much on his legs, mate, to be honest.
Honestly, they were magnificent.
It is a difficult one, isn't it?
Mm.
It is, you know, I can understand if we were on the end of that, I'd be livid.
But again, it's like I've seen Exeter fans saying, oh, if we got, I'd be annoyed if we got that as a try. No, you wouldn't. The whole thing about the decision for me, I felt that when you look at when Woodburn has a split second to make a decision on whether he feels he can go and make the tackle. Or even he's looking, maybe thinking, I'm going to get under the ball, under the try line.
See, I don't actually, I think, and this is where Dixon potentially could have not given the penalty try and he could have said, no, the player, and because he's obviously in communications with the other officials, he could have said, I don't believe that the player has gone down on the player on the floor.
No.
Because clearly he went to ground himself before making contact.
Yeah.
And he did clearly try to slide in front of Ashton with his hand in a trying to get.
TMO wasn't so keen on it either, was he?
No, and you could tell. You can tell
just that before was... our power got cut off. I could hear the TMO sort of saying, "I'm not sure it's that sort of decision, Carl. You might want to look at it or words
yeah.
that effect."
I've got no problem.
And then the power went, and I was like, "Oh, great." Yeah.
I've got no problem with Dixon making that decision if he feels that that genuinely was a preventing a probable try scoring opportunity through an act of foul play. Yes, that by the letter of the law is the way you have to go. It has to be a yellow card and a penalty try. I think, as you said, Jim, there was enough grey area and wiggle room for Carl Dixon to not do that. And I don't know. I think my view on it, unless it's serious foul play, and we'll come on to back to his comments, Russ, now, and I'll let you have your rant about unless it's serious foul play, because that wasn't serious foul play.
No, it's.
I don't think you should be looking to send a player off the pitch.
We've all talked about this. The best refs are the refs who talk to the players, who have some empathy with what's going on, and apply the rules. And I think we're all in agreement. If it's foul play, then yes, it's there's no grey area. That wasn't foul play. That's a player, like you said, in a split second going, what can I do to stop a try? And if I've got a player who's running towards the corner going, oh, I don't know, this is too risky for me. I'm going to let him score. I don't want him in my team.
You could say the same about Ludlow on Friday night.
Yeah. I said that.
A year ago, that tackle was absolutely bang on, not a problem at all. And now it's just ever so slightly maybe over the shoulder.
Yeah, that was my bit. I agree, Jim. That was my gut reaction at the time. I was like, that feels harsh. He's trying his best to stop a try with it didn't look like there was any serious attempt at being malicious in that tackle.
It wasn't a swinging arm. It wasn't.
Yeah, there was no.
It wasn't neck and head, was it?
It's how do I get this? Yeah, how do I get this guy into touch and stop him scoring? That's what it felt like to me. And yeah, there needs to be a bit of empathy, and it is a tricky thing. Like ultimately, we're all a big fan of wanting the game to be as safe as possible, but rugby's not a sport that you can remove every element of risk from. Sometimes you'll get a knee to the head, you'll get caught by an elbow, and there's no malice to it. It just happens.
So on your other point, Russ, which was the reaction on Twitter by the Plexter players, 100%. If that is a football team and football players coming out after the game and criticising a referee in that manner, every single one of them would be getting a ban. And I'm sorry, it's not acceptable. I've noticed, I mean, don't be wrong, Gloucester players have done this as well. There's been a few issues and incidents where Gloucester players have come out and made comments, and I feel exactly the same way. You cannot and should not be able to make comments, if you're a professional rugby player, about the officials, certainly of your own game. That's just not acceptable.
Marler did it as well. It wasn't just Dexter.
And again, that's not the first time that Joe Marler's done that. Joe Marler has done that about other games. I have serious questions about whether that should be allowed at all. If you are a professional rugby player, you should not be able to, on social media, comment about a refereeing performance in another game on the basis that we say, if a football player, a professional football player, does that now, the FA will absolutely hammer them, and quite rightly, because we talk about Russia, and I'm really kind of, I get very annoyed about this because Russ, you're right. We talk about rugby values and how rugby, this holier-than-thou view around rugby. And there's been a lot of stuff recently about referees in football getting abuse and being threatened with violence or suffering from violence. And I'm not saying that this is the start of that in rugby, but it's the thin edge of the wedge. If you allow professional rugby players to criticise the officials openly, why does that not stop somebody on a Saturday afternoon playing club rugby doing the same but to their face or for getting involved? It cannot be allowed to happen. They should be banned. I'm sorry, they should be banned for 6, 8, 10, 12 weeks. Make it a real statement. I think it's totally unacceptable. I'm willing to be shot down by people on Twitter and everyone else. I just find it is,
and they can get banned too.
Yeah, ban them. Anyway, right.
I have to say, can I just, one thing I did laugh at though, was that screenshot that Russ dropped into our group chat with Luke Cowan-Dickie going on about it. And the,
yes,
the
guy saw that, quote, yeah.
He quoted Law 13.4, says that that's a yellow card and it's a correct decision. And he replied with the rugby equivalent of your mum. Or just Norse.
Yeah. It's, I mean, let's be, Ed,
that whole thing can get in the bin as well.
It
that whole,
can get in the bin. Yes. Yeah.
Rugby Norse. Yeah. Off, we actually care about the game. Sod off. Anyway. Yeah.
Oh, how dare you look at the game better than someone who should fucking know them?
Exactly.
You know, but this is the thing. It's like the comeback to me. If that's your comeback, it's like saying your mum.
Yeah, exactly. You lost
the argument, haven't you? But on to, it kind of feeds back into the Baxter comments about the, and then we also talk about head contacts and stuff and red cards. So Rob Baxter was saying in the week that we're looking for any opportunity to take players off the field, that we should be looking at maybe replacing a red card for head contacts, etc., where it's not, you know, malicious foul play, etc., with a you can replace that player, but they are then sent off for the rest of the game. Russ, I'll let you have your thoughts.
I try and be diplomatic about it because, in my opinion, he couldn't be any more wrong. Because the whole point of a red card is to punish a side, and maybe, just maybe, if players, coaches like him focused on teaching his players to tackle better, then they wouldn't have that issue. Now, the problem for me is a red card is an absolute, like, we've got no choice. You've got to go. Mm-hmm. Now, I know there is a lot of crackdown on the head contact. We can argue, we've argued things like Ruin's leg breaker the other week should have been a red card. There are issues with that. That's not down to the power of the red card. That's to do with the interpretation of the law. If a player is sent off, the biggest punishment, I remember this from local rugby, is you don't want to be the player who has to go in after your side has lost and you've sat on your ass on the bench and face your team. That is the biggest deterrent of a red card for me. And also, I have a problem with the one that sticks in my head and I can't reconcile it, is when Dylan Hartley got a red card for calling Rain Barnes a fucking cheat. Why should he be allowed to be replaced? That's beyond the pale for me. And that's the issue with it. I don't like the idea of an orange card or whatever. It should be a red and a yellow. If you're going to sort it out, we have to stick to the head contact, but got to sort out the way the laws are applied, the way the laws are interpreted, and like we've said, the way the TMO is. And I know there are people here who disagree. I'm trying to be mild-mannered about it because I don't want to make it something stupid, but I feel that's it for me. It's a non-starter.
They need to look at what's a normal rugby incident. So cast your mind back to when Nolly Thorley got sent off last season. That was just an actual accident, a normal rugby incident. There never should be a red card. I don't care what the letter of the law says. Is there head contact? Is there any mitigation? The mitigation is clear. It wasn't an act of foul play. Peter O'Mahony coming flying in and clearing that ruck out against, well, I think it was Scotland in the Six Nations 2 years ago.
Yeah.
That's an act of foul play.
Yes.
A swinging arm or a shoulder to the head, that's an act of foul play. Like today, on Friday night, I just had the highlights on. I had to turn it off on the Gloucester Bath game. But they just showed the Ellis Genge yellow card against Sale. And it was mitigation, was the fact the player stepped into it. Fine. It's a shoulder on the head. If that's contact without any mitigation, I agree that should be red because there's no way a shoulder should be leading into the head like that. But if a player is slightly upright in the tackle and there's a clash of heads, if the contact of the arms is in a legal place around someone's chest region, I don't see it, and they happen to clash heads. That's just unfortunate. He is tackling at a legal height.
So I've got sort of going back to the Woodburn incident today.
Yeah.
Right. Here's a thought. Could you say that's a yellow card, so he has another 10 minutes off? And actually, two yellows don't make a red. Because a red card is for acts of foul play.
So
a yellow card's a bit more your professional foul type scenario.
I agree with that one, Jim. Yeah.
And what I would say as well is that they absolutely, and I think, you know, it would have to be at international level, maybe men's premiership level, and that's probably an European, and that's probably it. But having that additional TMO, whose job it is when there is one of these incidents, it's a yellow card straight away, bosh, off you go. And then you've got 10 minutes where this guy or gal is staring at the screen, doing their thing. And they basically, they don't liaise with the ref at all, except for to say, just to let you know, I've decided it's actually going to be upgraded to a red.
Yeah. And then in the next break of play, the referee can go, do the TV signal, pick up a red card, point it towards the bench. Then everyone will know that that's been upgraded from a yellow to a red.
Yeah.
And I
or
agree
show
with
the
that.
Yellow and then show the red.
You so know. Both of those
because,
I agree
it
with.
Just doesn't, it, they want to, I think Wayne Barnes is really keen for making quick decisions, which, and he's, you know, one of the best referees in the world. So 99% of the time they are the correct one. And by making a quick decision keeps the flow of the game and it's brilliant. But occasionally there are mistakes. And actually, if you've got 10 minutes for someone to look at it and potentially have a chat with the other TMO, who's not doing their TMO job at that exact moment or can be kind of looking at the screen at the same time as having the conversation. So they're still...
If there's an injury or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, then they can actually come up with a good decision. And I think it doesn't need... You don't need... it happened today.
The only thing is...
Carl asked the question today, you know, basically, I didn't see it. I was nowhere near it. Try yes or no. And there's a couple of times that you think, well, it just doesn't matter. And he's like, oh, it's a bit out of focus. I can't really see. Tell me what I'm seeing.
Yeah, so you
and,
just...
And actually, you need a good referee that just goes, look...
The only fear I have with the red card is the referee is the sole arbiter of the game. And if you're allowing someone who's not the referee to upgrade a yellow to a red, you've taken that away. And what does that...
So
you'll probably poo-poo me on this, but does it lead to a precedent for elsewhere in the match? And so, next thing we're going in the
university challenge. The captain nominates the person just because he can't say the complicated answer.
I see your point there, Loz. And I think there is. Look, there's no way in a million years this is the perfect answer. But I do think what they're trying in the Southern Hemisphere with the opportunity to either upgrade or potentially even rescind a card. Is that in live play is the way to go. There's going to be things we need to work out. I think the difficulty you've got is you've got that stress between wanting the game to flow and decision to be made relatively quickly and getting the right decision. And I think, you know, I don't personally have an issue with having another official in play who is all they're doing is looking at these incidents. You know, there's already five officials on the side of the pitch before we even talk about the TMO, a Premiership game. So we're not adding hugely to the costs here, etc. I think it's only going to apply where you've got live coverage or, you know, you've got the footage.
Actually, we talked about this before. They don't have to be there. They could be
Stockley Park type thing.
Yeah, they could be at home with all the data.
Yeah, but all matches have got to be analysed you can't just have because it's on television. It's bad enough with the fact that you've got Austin Healey and Ben Kate and Lawrence Delalio turn around and say, "Oh, I think they need to look at this," when the TMO's missed it and they go back and find something. That game's either got an advantage or disadvantage on the rest of the games.
I do agree with that, Loz. If you're going to apply it, it needs to apply to all games. In terms of the ref, I don't mind who makes the decision so long as it's clear who's in charge. Like we said, I think we made this point last week. The one that bugs me is when the TMO cannot directly argue with the ref and they're just going, yeah, Carl, I think you might be a little bit wrong. You might want to look at it from another angle or I'm not sure you've got your interpretation. Just say, I think you're wrong. I'm the TMO. I've Googled the laws. And this is what the laws say, you know, give them the ability to make that right decision, make it clear where the power lies.
I don't think I've ever really had when the referee's having the chat with the two touch judges, you know, about something. I don't think maybe once I can remember, I couldn't remember the exact game, but only once I think where a touch judge has gone, well, actually, no, I don't agree with that.
I think Barnsley was on the touch, wasn't he?
The referee's saying his thing. Are we all in agreement? And then you just go, yes, boss. You know.
I think Nigel Owens has turned around and pulled someone back.
Owens has done it, I think, but even TMOs, I've only seen a few times that a TMO has stood their ground and gone, you need to look at the height of the tackle. You know, they would just keep standing there.
Just to clarify everything, when we were talking about this in our chat, and I appreciate people aren't able to see what we're talking about, but just to say, I was saying that Ed was pretty triumphant on his extra TMO person. And I was just thinking that actually what we need to do is just get a red card being for foul play.
Yeah,
Go back to, they never used to be, even, look, I know there's been head contact and it's what we're trying to get in the game, and I agree that we should be trying to get this out of the game. But if it's a normal rugby, and I've been saying this ever since we've been doing the pod, if it's a normal rugby incident, it cannot start at a red card, and they need to define foul play differently.
A clash of heads
in a tackle cannot be foul play. It's an accident.
I think the biggest problem with Baxter's comment, you set all this aside. My other problem with it was his argument that it ruins the spectacle. Now, someone far more knowledgeable than me went on, looked at it, out of the last 100 games where there's been a red card, and I think they did it after 20 minutes, so it was a decent amount of time where you're down a man. The team at full 15 won 65 times to 35, so it wasn't actually a huge swing. And
I'm imagining some of the 35s would have definitely been against Gloucester.
I imagine most of them would have been against Gloucester. And also the point was, and this is why it was funny that they got pumped, is someone else put, like, I think it's Sam Lana to put it, said to people, give me a game where the game match was ruined by the red card, and no one could name it because he had all the stats, and they go England Ireland. He's like 7 points in it until 5 minutes to go. It's only the game this weekend where they got absolutely fucking pumped when Woodburn went in the bin. It's the only evidence he's got of a game where a red card has a huge factor in the result of the game.
Well, I think you could say the Women's World Cup final. Maybe that.
I didn't see that. That should never have been a red card. Really, that was good. A rugby incident.
But then
it made the game really, really good, because England should probably have won by a couple of scores, and they ended up losing by
the smallest
of margins. But then, as a spectacle, if you were a total impartial neutral, you'd have gone, that was a fantastic game, and the red card. Obviously, as an England supporter, you go, well, it's an absolute travesty. But that's only because we lost. If you ask a Kiwi, they'd say, well, yeah, of course it was. It was an illegal tackle. The letter of the law deserved a red card.
They're the first to moan that it should be a red card as well.
Most of the time, you have that moment where you lose a game. So the one that always sticks in my head was when Cipriani got sent off against Munster as well. Yeah, that was a hard one. It was frustrating, but we actually played all right. And you do, you know, there's that but for argument, but that's sport.
That should never have been a red card. Yeah. I agree, Loss,
and that's what needs sorting out. But you take away that element. The converse one was, and we all watched this, was when Johnny Hill got sent off against Ireland. Not once did I think, well, that's the game ruined. Most of the time I was thinking, Johnny Hill, you fucking idiot, you've cost us the game. And
that's the whole point of a red card. Exactly. There should be anything wrong with that.
Exactly.
And it needs to be for serious foul play.
So that's my argument in a nutshell. And that's what I'm saying. I didn't at any point think, well, I want someone to go, no, Johnny, you've been a very, very naughty boy. Off you go. But don't worry, one of the other boys is going to come on and make this a fair game. And, like, we don't want to spoil this for the rest of the lads, do we?
Now, kind of going back to the previous then, having, like, maybe I'm starting to come round to the, you have your yellow card and then it's a forced sub. So you actually lose.
No, that's not what we're supposed to be doing. I've been ranting about this for ages. Oh, this is why I didn't go into law. This is why I didn't make it as a lawyer. You've gone the opposite way to what my argument.
There might be a few other reasons, mate. I'll be honest, that's the only reason.
Yeah, yeah. I can't convince Jim.
I'm sorry, I don't agree with anyone who says this anything other than far, you know. This is one where I will literally argue to I'm blue in the tooth about it's got
the teeth.
Where I've lost all sense of feeling in my nerves, in my mouth, and my teeth start to go blue. Or I've drunk that much red wine.
Sucked off a Smurf. I don't know. I mean, I just.
Fucking hell.
Anyway. I think this needs to be cut out.
No, that line has to stay.
Oh, for what? So I sucked off a Smurf. That's not fucking.
Anyway,
Ed can edit it, so you are the one who says it.
dear. Anyway, I'll take your point.
What I'm trying to say is there's nothing controversial about deciding whether it's a rugby incident or whether it's malicious foul play. If two players collide in a tackle, is the position of the body, the contact of making the tackle, taking away the head contact, is two arms wrapped and around the chest? Yes. From there on, it cannot be a red card. And that's what most of the red cards are for at the moment, is because in the process of tackling, someone's slightly upright,
And then there's been a clash of heads. I agree with that. I think that's not foul play.
That's a normal rugby incident. If you are tackling someone at the height, that is legal. It should not be down to you to duck down lower because the other player could duck down lower into it and cause exactly the same problem.
I agree. I think that's the bit. Well, Russ, we're going to go around.
I just want to say I will concede to Jim because I did cut him off massively with my rage meltdown. I don't think you should be allowed to replace a yellow card. I do like the idea that if it's two yellow cards, it doesn't necessarily equate to a red if they are very differing circumstances. I could see some merit in that.
Personally, I think for the sake of clarity, it's incredibly rare that players get two yellow cards in a game. I think Woodburn's one. I remember there was a Bath player against Gloucester a few years ago, got two yellow cards as well. It's incredibly rare that you get two yellow cards in a game. I don't think it's something you need to change the law on or regulations around. I do think Loz is right. The key bit is, first of all, with all the head contact stuff, is we have to work on the basis of what is foul play. Mm-hmm. Foul play. And if we're going to say, look, you could even go, there's lots of things you can do around. You have a 10 minute period. Every time there is a head contact involving tackles, you can say, right, unfortunately, because it's head contact, you have to go off for HIA. You have to go for off because you're the person responsible for 10 minutes. A dedicated TMO can look at it and go, is there foul play? No. They can come back on after 10 minutes. Is there foul play? Yes. Red card. Simple. That should be kind of the way we look at it, maybe. Let's try and get rid of the thing. I take Loz's point exactly, and I agree. The foul play bit is the first part of this we have to look at. And once we get that sorted, I think a lot of this will then sort itself out. Final couple of things in the pod this week. Wasps are apparently looking at resurrecting themselves and building a new stadium.
At Easter, so appropriate.
Yeah, which will become be delightful news for all the people that are owed money from the previous club. I just can't understand how that would work. Anyway,
where was this new stadium proposed?
M40 corridor.
M40 corridor.
Narrowed it down.
Yeah. Now, personally, it ain't gonna happen. This is not gonna happen. If I was a betting man, and I'm not a betting man, as shown by the fact that the horse I chose on for the Grand National finished about 12th.
Mine came in second last.
That's good. To be fair, it didn't die, which is a massive plus. If I was a betting man, I'd say in 2 years, 3 years time, they're gonna be at six ways. That's what's going to happen. To be honest, it's the path of least resistance and the cheapest way of doing it. But so that was the first bit of news which came out. If they're in the championship next year, they're going to win the championship. They're going to get promoted because it's Wasps, because they'll end up with picking a stadium they can play from. So there we go.
Hang on, is it that given that they will? They've lost all their players. They're just going to miraculously, these players going to miraculously come back.
They'll
have to sign a squad. And I'm not so sure if I would want to be, if I was a player, if I wouldn't necessarily want to go to someone who's gone tits up previously. And
well, the thing is, all those championship players are going to be contracted to their clubs. There's not going to be a huge amount of out of contract affordable championship level players.
None about. I think there's quite a few, Jim. I think there's quite a few. A lot of championship players.
A lot of championship players are
on 1 year contracts. And I wouldn't be surprised if you look at Wasp, if they come in and they've got actual backers and decent people who can put some money behind it. Bless you, Russ. Anybody can put some money behind it. They'll buy out contracts, etc.
I mean, let's be fair. There are some good players in that championship as well. We just need the right market. In the past, we have benefited from players in that division as well. Mark Atkinson, Tim Molinar was a championship player when we brought him in as another who springs to mind.
Akapusi Ongera.
Yeah. So I get what Ed's saying. If they get the right offer of money and a chance like you guys could make a name for yourself, then it would probably be a temptation to a lot of players. But
I mean, it's standard, though, in that it's English rugby. We've got no idea if Wasps are actually in the championship next season. And we are 5 months away from the beginning of that tournament. So
they might join Ealing in Wales.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
I just don't agree with the fact they can come straight back in at championship level and just sort of come back from the dead, not pay the debts, the money that.
Well,
they own,
so it sounds like Russ. Sorry, Loz. What they've done is they have paid the rugby creditors. That's why. Right. That's why the RFU are allowing them back in. Why Worcester aren't is because Worcester refused to pay the rugby creditors.
Yeah, us.
So that's inherently why, and it looks like the Worcester farce that's going on. So that the RFU are saying, no, you're not even allowed to come in at level five level five now. You have the highest you can come in if you are involved in any way as a Worcester side is level 10.
That's still higher than Doughty where it played that though, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's not hard though, is it?
No, I know.
Can you imagine?
But that's what you should be at. I'm sorry, into if the merit table. Club, you should come in on the merit table.
I now have visions of them being in a league where they could get promoted, but they don't because it's done on averages, like hard batshit. The team led to play in and goes, sorry lads, you can't raise a side, you know.
Yeah, some team gives them a walkover and it means
they're in the car park ready to leave and they get a phone call. Yeah. That's never happened.
Exactly. I think
the thing with Worcester is it's almost like if you made the RFU get a hammering in front of a select committee in Parliament and be told how shit a job they've done, that suddenly they're going to get their house in order a little bit, and you might suffer for that when you're trying to get a cheeky one back in.
Yeah, that and the fact that the current owners of the Worcester Warriors, or Worcester, or whatever the bloody they're called, Six Ways Rugby, there's nothing at all suspicious or worrying about any of the statements they've made.
I mean, he's been really honest and upfront in every interview I've ever seen him give. So exactly. Fair play to the guy. He's owning his mistakes.
Yeah, exactly. I think that covers off any libel or slander he might have possibly put in there.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
final bit before we start talking about ourselves again, which was the women's rugby, Jim. I don't know if you watched any of the women's game, England Wales. I thought it was it was quite entertaining on the basis that at one point England got down to 13 players and still managed to score two tries against a fully stacked Welsh side.
It was talked up quite a bit. Oh yeah, this is going to be a fantastic, really close encounter and all this. I'm like, no, it's not.
Wales
are so much better than they were 12 months ago.
They are much better,
exponentially better than they were 2 years ago. Mm. Those pro contracts are definitely kicking in and working. And
yes,
it was quite certainly the first, probably not
25 minutes. I think it was fairly tight, wasn't it?
Physically, the Welsh women were able to front up. They were powerful. The defence was fantastic. They went ahead, didn't they? It was 3-0, you know. So they definitely started really well. And I was like, yeah, but they won't have the fitness to be able to do this 60 minutes plus, and they won't have the bench to be able to do it 60 minutes.
No, the bench
plus.
Is just a killer.
So I knew what would happen. And then there was, I mean, to be fair, I think England maybe got a little bit of luck, like on a couple of times they scored fantastic tries, and you just thought, oof, you know, if it was really like a blade of plastic between the tackle being completed and not, and things like that. So the scoreline, without question, did not demonstrate what the game was like. It was that was one-sided, but Wales were way better than
I think Wales definitely looked like they were going to cause more problems than the scoreline showed. I think, but clearly, as I said, I think any time when your team that's gone down to 13 players and you look more dangerous than you did when you had 15,
and it's because the replacements for England didn't change anything.
No.
You know, it just maintains the standard.
Yeah.
And Wales don't have that. I don't know if you saw the Italy-Ireland game, but that was also very, very entertaining. I thought both those sides have improved, probably even more than Wales have. Thought they were really, really good. And it's quite exciting, really. I think come the next World Cup,
which is in England,
it'll actually be really, really good. Obviously, England are still going to be, you know, ahead of the game. New Zealand will be stronger than they are.
It's going to be England, New Zealand, France again, isn't it? Let's be honest. It'll be one of those.
But I think what's important to note is that Wales will be better than they are now, as will Italy, as will Ireland, as will Scotland, probably, although Scotland are a little bit slow to the being professional party. And I think it'll make the World Cup so, so much better. I don't know what's happening with Canada, because they were like fully amateur and did brilliantly. So I think they may have got a bit of money. But I mean, most of the decent players, like the, you know, Americans and the Canadians and stuff, they play in the UK anyway, don't they?
I mean, apparently mostly at Harbury, from what I can gather. Yeah.
Did you see the photo?
It's an entire team.
It was like a whole. It was basically the Gloucester Harbury squad.
I mean,
half of them in Welsh shirts, half of them in England shirts, and then a few other hangers on Mo in her Water Girl outfit.
It's a lot. I actually watched a bit of the England game because it was on in the afternoon. I got to catch it. And Loz says we need a tight head. Can we convince Sarah Byrne to come and have a go? Because her offload for one try. I mean, I've seen.
Oh, I know. That's
absolutely
not allowed,
phenomenal. And I mean,
that pass like, to Abby Doe as well for her.
Yeah, she's running around. She's just running around, running through people like they're not there. I genuinely would be terrified. Like, I imagine
there's Hannah Bosserman as well. Hannah Bosserman,
yeah.
As well.
I mean,
the number of turnovers that she gets is just really. It's fantastic.
I only watched a bit of the game, but I got the feeling because I saw it at the start. I got the feeling that England knew Wales would come at them with a big physicality and they just absorbed it.
Yeah.
Okay. Wales took the lead, but they never looked like getting a hold of England. You just knew that once England scored that first try, they'd regroup and go from there.
Yeah. And Abby Dow. Is probably the best winger in international rugby right now, men's and women's. I would say, like, she's just on fire. Just the line she's carving, and just got so much more gas compared to everyone else. It really is.
I think I know what you mean comparatively. Crazy. You can't compare the two, but yes, there is pound for pound,
they call it in boxing, don't they?
There isn't a winger in men's rugby that has the same impact as Abby Dow does in women's rugby. So I do take your point there, but you can't really compare the two.
I think Zamit's probably a bit quicker.
I would say
well,
so.
Well, it's difficult because there's far more competitive rugby in men's. You've just talked to three teams are going to be there or thereabouts in the World Cup because the rest aren't.
The rest are 5 years behind. Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas you don't have that in men's rugby, I'm afraid. I do enjoy my women's rugby. I don't watch very much of it. I do look out for the results of how Gloucester Hartbury are doing. But one of the things that I do find a bit frustrating about it is a lot of the games can be quite one-sided.
I agree with that. Yeah,
I think the thing what they have to do is not have those comparisons between men's and women's rugby.
Exactly. Let it be two different sports.
Football has learned not to do that a little bit more, hasn't it? And the women's game is thriving quite rightly. And you watch it and it's a very different type of football, but it's very good to watch. And I'd say the England rugby is, as someone who only gets to watch it.
Agreed.
If you saw the highlights of that England game, you're like, God, there's some phenomenal tries in there. There's some very good phases of rugby. It's a very, I'd say they've got a good brand there at the top level. I take
don't kick it all the
fucking
saying, time, which
yeah,
is a massive
exactly.
Women's sport tends to be far more technically skilled.
Yes.
Because they move away from the physicality of the
game.
Yes,
you can't rely on the physicality, can you?
They actually use far more skill than what men's rugby, certainly in rugby, men's rugby is.
I think it's what they do with it now, because it happened in rugby, didn't it? Where you in men's rugby, we had a couple of teams run away and then the rest of the teams have to figure out how to catch up. So it's how those teams that are way behind start to catch up and then kick on, hopefully, and give them, like you say, Loz, that brand where you're like, you're not going to think, well, there's four or five games that are a waste of space till we get to the later stages where the real competition happens. But
you
then that's
rugby
league where we'll, that's yeah, that, you've ruined my joke, Ed, because that was the thing, isn't it? That's rugby league. So, yeah.
But yeah, I don't watch rugby league either.
Yeah.
Sorry,
but yeah, I agree, Loz, but that's what I mean. You can't ban that back. There is a lot. There's a lot to a really good progress in women's rugby, and it's nice to see.
It is, exactly. And as someone who a couple of weeks ago went to the Finalissima at Wembley with my daughter, 84,000 people watching women's football, and it was normal. Yeah. Brilliant. And it even involved England, you know, capitulating and giving a last-minute goal away. So it was, you know, it's just like watching England men. Anyway.
While we're on the subject of women's rugby, big congratulations to Cheltenham for getting to Twickenham.
Oh, they did get to Twickenham. They beat Bath, didn't they? Yeah. Yes,
they
excellent
beat Bath.
Result.
They beat Bath.
They beat Bath.
At least one of our teams this week did.
Yeah, exactly. Right. We're going to find final bit. It's been a great pod. Going to be lots of fun to edit. but we're going to finish off again just to say thank you so much to everyone who voted for us in the Sports Podcast Awards.
Agreed.
It genuinely means a huge amount because, as I said, we right at the beginning of the pod, we did this, well, it was mainly me on furlough doing sod all, and I thought, well, I'll try and rope these idiots in and we can have a chat about rugby and how miserable it has been a Gloucester fan, and 3 years later we're still doing it.
And we're still miserable being a Gloucester fan.
But it does really mean a huge amount. We're hopeful to have some interviews lined up again with some interesting people in the coming weeks. I know we've definitely got Alex Brown booked in for the next season, so that's going to be really good ahead of the 150th anniversary. And obviously, one other final thing, I've had a few people say to me, how much money do you make off this? And
I'm keen to hear this, actually. Yeah, how much do you make?
Bearing in mind, dad just recently moved house.
Yeah, true. So to answer your question, if a few people have asked me, do you make any money off it? And the answer is no. We started off, there was a small bit of advertising, as if you've been listening to us from the start, which kind of plugged the platform that we use to sort of generate the pod. That allowed us to knock a bit of money off some tickets to watch Gloucester Sale last season. We don't make any money off the pod. It is literally just me and the lads doing this out of our own time.
We're not making any now. We made about 12 quid. We made about 12 quid and now we're not making any.
No, at all, Jim. And we don't get any money for finishing third in the best rugby podcast in the world.
Ed, Ed, your negotiating skills are not great, are they?
Well, I haven't tried, which does suggest no.
There you go. That's the problem.
So anyway, right. What we will
if
do
if there's
is...
anyone out there that wants to sponsor us.
Yes, I was going to say. Yeah. So we will. There will be some investigative
stuff. At the moment, the offers are zero. So
yes.
Anything above zero.
anything above zero would be nice. Not that we look. And
zero or beer.
Or beer. Yeah. Beer yeah. Or above zero.
Tiny Rebel, we promised to speak nicer about Newport and Wales as a whole. If you
never. Never. I'm never.
I was going to say, do you really think Tiny Rebel would ever sponsor us after what we've said about Wales
and Newport specifically?
And Newport more so, I think.
Yeah. No, I think that ship has sailed, yeah. But the nuclear apocalypse that is Newport. What we will do is I will be reaching out to anybody who would like to get involved with us. I'm very happy to have a conversation. We want to take it to a not necessarily a new level, but we will maybe make it slightly more professional than it has been. And bearing in mind, no professionality at all, and we've managed to get
that's not hard.
We've got to third in the world.
Yeah. If we get sponsored by a beer or alcohol company, we're going to end up being more pissed than we are when we record this.
We can drink it all week, but not when we record it.
That's true.
We just have to plug it while we're recording.
No.
That's too long. Let's be honest. If we follow the pattern of Gloucester, the next time we get nominated, we've got to come ninth.
I was disappointed we didn't finish ninth.
We're not doing this right, are we?
In many ways, I was thinking first or ninth.
I'll be honest with you, I'm worried we might finish 10th in the rugby this year.
Well, there is actually an outside chance we finish bottom. Anyway.
I think 8th. I think we should sneak in 8th.
You think we're going to win one of the last two games?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm not convinced it's going to be either of them. That's the trouble.
Do you mean what you're saying is we might get enough bonus points to just randomly finish 8th?
Maybe.
Possibly. Okay. On that
it's
note.
It's dangerous, isn't it? We are going to Bristol, aren't we? Are we having a bit of a
I don't think we've finalised that, actually, because it's, 3 weeks away, isn't it? 4 weeks away?
That's it.
Yeah, we have to have a proper chat about that, don't we? So, yes, that is a possibility. I'd rather that than watch the bloody coronation, which, you know... I'm surprised you're not on call, Jim, to be honest. You're not being summoned down to Westminster to stand guard with your hose out?
With all my medals out? No. No, you're right.
Jim with his hose out normally happens after a lot more alcohol.
I thought you were worried that there was going to be an uprising or something in Cheltenham, Ed.
An uprising in Cheltenham? What, for yeah. over the
That's
the
why Jim, why Jim
fair,
would be on call.
I think our terror alert state's actually gone down, but, you know, that'll probably change in the next few weeks.
I imagine it might do, Jim. Yeah. That's a weird way to end a podcast. Anyway, on that note, thanks very much, guys. Have a great week. We've got Sale on Saturday.
They might be resting some players. We might be okay.
Well, yes, they have qualified, haven't they? So that is a chance.
Yeah, but not for a home semi, though, have they? Especially with the way Leicester's going.
Isn't their last game against Newcastle, though?
Yeah. Double down on your last.
It's against Newcastle, but they've got a banker against us. Why would you not go for it?
Yeah, why wouldn't you go for it? Yeah, set Manu Tuilagi loose on us. That'd be brilliant. Right, anyway, thanks, guys.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Bye. Cheers, boys.